What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
So Lonzo went through during the break and he found at least a couple of examples of guys that transferred predominantly off of teams that made the playoffs. Now, they're majoritively guys that didn't really play or didn't play in the regular season. So that is why I stand on, I want to kind of limit it to players of note, right? Like the fifth string offensive tackle. Now, it hurts your depth. It hurts your ability to practice. Sure, I'm not arguing with that. But I've also pointed out before that this is a fixable solution.
The backup quarterback for Penn State.
Yes, we knew that one. Yeah.
So there are guys like that. I mean, could have been very important.
Absolutely. And this is why I've said, I also want to point out that as much as many of you guys don't want to, I would also say we can fix that. Change the window. I don't understand why the transfer portal window in the winter is where it is. Well, if you give guys effectively two opportunities to transfer, one's in the winter, one's in the spring. There, guys that have an opportunity to transfer in the winter are going to do it. Well, Rob, why don't the playoff guys just wait until the spring? Because jobs are full by then, right? If you are good enough to be the backup quarterback at Penn State, there's 100 schools you're good enough to go be an immediate starter. And even if those are smaller schools and maybe the NIL potential is limited there, you still got more if that is your priority. And even if it's not, like, here's my thought. I think a lot of people rush to make the assumption that these guys are all transferring for NIL money. That's not necessarily true. I think a lot of them may be transferring so they can play. I don't want to go to college to go to be on a college football team and ride pine for 4 years, graduate, and never have anybody know what I did.
Those two things go hand in hand. If you go somewhere and play, you're going to get more NIL money.
Sure, but what I'm saying is the prioritization of the two of them may not be the same. I think the assumption is we all make the assumption, not we all, I don't. A lot of you make the assumption that if Penn State's backup quarterback transfers, oh, he just wants to go somewhere and make that NIL money. I mean, maybe. Or maybe because Drew Aller's coming back next year and he's out of eligibility, he realizes, well, if Drew's coming back and I stay here, guess what I'm not going to do? Play college football. Nobody wants a scholarship to go practice college football. They want to play.
Luke Doty.
Didn't he transfer?
No.
No, Robbie Ashford transferred. Oh. Robbie Ashford transferred. And again,
I mean, there are exceptions. That's all I'm saying.
Exactly. I'm sure that there are. But we're not, by and large, I assume that if you're a competitor and you want to go play college football, you want to go play college football. Again, put yourself in the shoes of a guy like, and I'm blanking on the kid's name, the Penn State backup quarterback. God dang it.
I just had it.
Bo Pribula. Bo Pribula. You're Bo Pribula. You're a competitor. You're a ball player. And I go, here's your options, Bo. You can go be the backup quarterback at Penn State for 4 years and not play. You can be the backup, though. You'll practice. You'll be the guy. If the starter goes down, you're the next guy up, but there's no guarantee, right? You're next guy up. But you're probably not going to play. And even if you do play, you're really just holding the spot warm until the starter comes back. Or you can go to, I don't know, Wake Forest and be a starter. Be a starter. You can go to NC State, be a starter. Because he could. He's probably good enough to go to one of those, let's say, lower tier ACC schools. He could go to a Vanderbilt and be a starter. Right? You can go there and you can play and you could be a campus hero and yada, yada, yada. You could go. Which of those are you more likely to take? Because I'll tell you right now, I love being here. If I got the call up from WFAN in New York City, the biggest sports talk station in the world, and they called and said, Rob Brown, we'd like to hire you to come up to New York and be our full-time producer. I'm saying no to that. I didn't get into this business to sit in a room and not talk.
I don't know. The New York producer probably makes pretty good money.
Maybe I'm so.
Just saying.
Also lives in New York City, which, by the way,
which
I love New York City,
more
but
to
it ain't
live
cheap.
At, so, right. Yeah, it
if,
would
if they
out.
Said, Rob Brown, we'll pay you three times as much to come up to New York City and be our full-time producer, you're not gonna be on a show. You'll be on a show producing it. You're not going to be a character. You're not going to be on. I'm going to say no to that because I put in 17 years to figure out, I think, how to at least be okay at this. I strive for mediocrity, but like, I'm not going to be a backup. And they go,
there
hey,
are some days when you reach that. I want you to know that.
I appreciate that. That's the nicest thing anybody will say to me today. I'm not going up to New York City to do that. I'd rather play. And yes, the fan upstate is not WFAN New York City, but it's a damn good station, and I'm on it. Lonzo and I's faces are on the building. You think I'm going to WFAN? You think they're going to put my face on a building?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Still really cool, by the way. I don't think that'd ever get old.
Would I make more money? Probably. Probably. Is that enough to change my mind? No. So the point here is, if the window is in the winter, because Bo Pribula wants to transfer. He's never going to play at Penn State. Maybe he loves Penn State. Maybe he always wanted to be a Nittany Lion. But he goes, I also want to play. I also love football. If Bo Pribula waits until the fall window, he goes, I'm going to stay on the team. I'm going to help. I'm going to be the practice squad QB. I'm going to be the guy that tests out the defense. I'm going to be that. I'm going to be there for James. That's great. But he waits until the end of the spring to transfer, into window number two. He waits till window number two, but he puts his name in the portal. Well, guess what? Vandy's got their quarterback. Wake's got their quarterback. NC State's got their quarterback. They're in spring practices now. They already got their guy. He spent the entire winter learning the playbook, getting with his dudes, playing some NCAA 2K at night to develop that chemistry. They're already there. Unless Bo Pribula, as a dude who's never seen the playbook, is a guarantee to step in a bit. He could probably, in a spring window, transfer to North Dakota State and get an auto starting spot.
I don't know.
All right, that might not be the best example, but you get the point I'm trying to make here. He could transfer to a lot of schools and be the starter, but it's going to be a massive step down, not a little one. Little step down, he starts, but he's got to do it now. So to me, I'm not faulting the players who transfer in the winter window, even if their team is in the playoffs. Bo Pribula, likely, pending an emergency situation, is not going to see the field in the college football playoffs. He's just not. So he's got an opportunity to transfer in the winter window to a school that goes, we got a spot for you, dog. And if you show up today, you're going to get the playbook and you're going to start playing. We're going to go ahead and sign you. We're going to get you in the program. We're going to get you ready to be our starting quarterback next year. If you wait till the spring, that team's already found their QB because competition is out there. So why wait? Why wait? He's got a 1 in 12 chance to win a national championship as a backup. You think they're going to hang his jersey in the rafters after that? No, because he ain't going to do anything unless Drew Aller goes down. And on top of that, respectfully, is there a team in the Final Four? Was there a team in the 12, in the top 12? Was there one team, though, in the top 12 that you think if their starting quarterback went down, they're alive today? Because the answer to me is no. None of them. None of them lose QB1, and they're still alive today.
I don't know. There are a couple of teams really
eight
good.
Eight of them had their QB1 and aren't alive today.
Yeah, a couple of teams with really good running games where I think they might have been all right.
I'll tell you this. Boise State was only alive in that game because Madsen was dropping darts when Janty was being hounded by Penn State. It's the only reason they kept it alive as long as they did. If Boise State has to go to QB2, they are cooked by the Nittany Lions.
A few years ago, Ohio State would go, yeah, we got this.
Yeah. So if I'm... And even still, I would make the argument that a good part of the reason for this, for Ohio State being where they are, is because playoff Will Howard is a different breed of horse chestnut.
So far.
I mean, dude is balling.
Hopefully he continues that tomorrow night.
Absolutely. By the way, Ohio State's backup quarterback, Aaron Nolan, transferred to South Carolina.
He was one of them. He was one of the...
Well, one of backups.
Yeah, I think Sayan is the backup.
Regardless of whoever it is, however it worked out. Let's be real clear. Had to go. Because now, that's not to say South Carolina's job was open, but there was something about South Carolina that was attractive to Aaron Olin.
All right.
What a name, by the way.
Yeah. That one was, I thought, a little weird because Lenora Sellers is going to be there a couple
more
years.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. But Aaron Olin's got, what, I think 3 years of eligibility left? So he may look and go, I play like, because he does, he plays like Lenora's, same similar setup. And he goes, wait a minute, all right, South Carolina's got this guy, and he is the guy, and he's going to be a Heisman candidate coming into the year next year, Lenora Sellers is. So if he's a Heisman candidate, what are they going to do? South Carolina's going to build their whole system around that. They're going to build a whole system around Lenora Sellers. Well, what happens in a year or two when Lenora Sellers takes off to the NFL? Guess what? The system's already built for me. I'm that guy. So I go there, I spend 2 years, and unless they recruit and bring in a guy who is clearly going to take my job, in which case I'll just transfer again, they're building everything. You see what I'm saying? But if he waited till the fall, Robbie Ashford transfers, Shane Beamer goes out there, gets a couple of quarterbacks to bring into that system, now all of the sudden, there's no guarantee there's anything for Aaron Olin. So why would I stay on a Buckeye team? Yeah, I'm going to get a ring if they win the Natty, but like, I'm not playing at all. I'm not, like, what am I here? I'm never going to play here. Because if I recall correctly, the Buckeyes have like two or three five-star quarterbacks that are coming up through the ranks. And he ain't one of them. So why not get out while I can, while there's a spot, while somebody wants me, that is going to have a system built for me in a year or two or three when I'm ready to take over. Why not make that move, right? That's my whole point. I'm not busting up the players who decide to leave even playoff teams because the option with the winter window is you leave in the winter window or you leave in the spring, but the jobs are full. Where are you going to go? This is why my old man used to tell me all the time when I was coming up through the ranks. I can't tell you how many jobs that I worked and I'm like, I'm done with this place. I'm done with this crap. And my old man, as I'm sure many of yours did, said, do not leave that job until what? Until you have another one lined up.
You have another job.
That's it. Do not leave that. You want to go out there and job hunt in your off hours? Do it. You want to build up the CV? Do it. You want to build up the resume and the folder or the demos or whatever? Do it.
What's a CV?
A resume.
Okay.
If you want to build that up and you want to go look for a job, absolutely do that. But do not leave the one you're at until you know you've got somewhere to land. Well, that's the same thing for these guys in the winter window. They're just making sure they have a spot to land. Because if I've left radio stations in the past to go somewhere else. But I can tell you, you know what the biggest fear for anybody in my position is? Getting pink slipped. Do you know why? Because if you are out of a job, you're out of a job. These jobs do not come open often. And when they do, the competition is cutthroat. I mean cutthroat. People that love each other on the day-to-day, when a job like this comes open, will stab each other right between the eyes to get it. All right? That's the industry that we're in. So it's the same for college football players. Every year there are how many tens of thousands of high school seniors that would love to go play college football? And now you add on top of that what we have last year, 1,700 players enter the transfer portal? 1,700. I mean, there's 10,000 football jobs available, but like how many of them are quarterbacks? Let's say every team has four. You're looking at maybe 1,000 quarterbacking jobs, most of them backups. They don't come open very often. And on top of that, as well, you know, the portal's an option. But I think if you talk to most college football coaches, I think most of them, they will take a transfer if the guy's a guy. But I think most of them would love to be able to get a guy coming out of high school that they know, that they like, that fits their system, that they can groom and develop within that system to take over the role. So even those jobs, there's not a ton of them. Of course they're going to leave in the spring. If you want to fix that, open the winter window the day after the national championship game. That's when that window opens. That way, a guy like Bo Pribula, the backup quarterback at Penn State, can stay on the team, help the team, be a part of the team, and know that, yeah, I'm going to transfer out of here. I'm going to stay on the team. I'm going to try to win a Natty. I'm going to transfer out of here as soon as I can, but I'll stay on to help the team, right? And then transfer, and he knows that he's got the same chance as a landing spot as a team that was, Florida State, 2-10. Didn't make a bowl game. Those guys were able to hit the window weeks ago. Shop weeks ago. So Bo can either bail on the team and be in the job market with those guys, or he can wait until, what is it, February? And all those guys got jobs. And every job that one of those guys gets is a job that Bo Pribula can't. Of course, change the window dates or quit getting mad at the kids who do not have a choice. He does not have a choice. He does, Rob. Wait till the window. There's no jobs after the window. Or at least the job market is way more restricted. Because every other quarterback that's going to transfer, they found a spot. They found a spot. And there's something to be said for that. All right. We got a lot more to get to this hour. That was the water cooler cheat sheet, of course, at 7 o'clock. That's on me. That's my bad. I totally blanked. So when we come back, water cooler cheat sheet, top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office 45 minutes from now, and then 52 minutes from now, take your first break of the day. I'll tell you what's going on in the world of sports when we come back. I'm Rob Brown. The Great Man Lonzo's on the ones and twos. The Rob Brown Show rolls on. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Fan Upstate.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
.7:20 in the a.m. portion of the day. You've got 40 minutes to get your behind the desk and get to work. And then you got about 55 minutes until you take that first break of the day, walk down the hallway, head on over into the break room, stand by the water cooler and talk sports with the like 2 to 4 people at work that you actually like. Well, if you're going to do that, you need to know what's going on in the world of sports. And if you need to know what's going on in the world of sports, don't you worry, Lonzo, when I have you covered, because every morning at 7:20, we do this. It's the water cooler cheat sheet, the top 3 sports stories that you need to know before you get to the office and start talking sports this lovely upstate Thursday morning. Let's start with item number 1. Keeping an eye, obviously, on these wildfires that are devastating Southern California around the Los Angeles community. It is beginning to, impact the National Football League. The NFL said earlier today it is monitoring the potential impact on the wildfires around the wildcard playoff game between the Vikings and the Rams, scheduled for SoFi Stadium this weekend. Yesterday, the NFL said it is continuing to prepare for the game to potentially be played on the road. As of right now, it is not scheduled to move. They are not planning on moving it, but the contingency plans are in place. If the game must be moved out of Los Angeles, it would take place Monday night at State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona, the home of the Cardinals. It would not be the first time an NFL game has been moved. In 2003, the league moved a Monday night regular season game between the Dolphins and the Chargers to Sun Devil Stadium in Tempe due to wildfires in the area. The Rams had the day off yesterday. They are slated to resume practice today. They said via team official that they are also monitoring the situation and that so far, no players or staff members have been affected by the fires. The team is headquartered in Woodland Hills, a neighborhood about 13 miles north of the Pacific Palisades, which is one of the areas that is currently being devastated by these fires right now. However, there is a mountain range. The Santa Monica Mountains are between the Rams HQ and where most of the players live in and around, and where the heaviest areas of fire damage are right now. Not a guarantee that this game is at SoFi as of right now. Again, SoFi appears to be largely capable of hosting this game coming up this weekend, but there is one more issue, and I think it is the primary one the NFL is keeping an eye on, and that is the air quality index. In the area of SoFi, it varied from 150 to above 300 in specific locations, as there is obviously smoke and ash coming down throughout the LA area. A rating of 150, according to a governmental system, is considered very unhealthy, according to ESPN. The air quality in Inglewood, where SoFi Stadium is located, as of yesterday afternoon was at 281, nearly twice what is labeled as an unhealthy amount of smoke, fog, and ash in the air. If that air quality does not come down, I would suspect that ultimately would be the reason that they move the game, because they are trying to take player safety into consideration here. But the NFL monitoring the wildfires in Southern California, potentially that Rams-Vikings game could be moved out to Tempe. We'll see how that plays out. Let's go to item number two. Things did not go well last night for the South Carolina Gamecock basketball team. They fall to 10-5 and are now 0-2 in the conference after an 88-68 loss to the number 5 ranked Alabama Crimson Tide. The story in this one, Jacoby Wright, 20 points, led all Gamecock scores. Jamari Thomas had 15, just 13 for Nick Pringle and 10 for Zach Davis. No other player scored in double digits, but the most damning number of all, 4 total bench points last night for the Gamecocks. Arden Conyers had a pair, and Cam Scott off the bench had a pair as well. The Gamecocks shot 42.5%-ish from the floor, but they were just 3 of 14 from range. They were out-rebounded by Alabama, but more importantly, Alabama shot 55% from the floor last night and 8 of 19, 42% from behind the arc. Alabama tried to give the Gamecocks an opportunity. They went just 50%, 10 of 20 from the stripe last night, or else this could have gotten even more out of hand than it did. Listen, I watched a chunk of this game last night. I rewatched a little bit of it this morning. I don't know what it is about this Gamecock basketball team. When something works, they seem to get away from it really easily. And I don't understand it. South Carolina rolled out to a 5-0 start. It was 9-5 at one point early in the game, and it was very similar to what happened in the win over Clemson a couple of weeks ago. Early in the game, it was a lot of play inside out basketball. Right? It was work guys are, hey, listen, man, I know Studi's not available to this team right now. He's got a leg injury that's going to keep him out for an unforeseen amount of time. And that's obviously a big loss, as Studi was a guy who really kind of opened up the outside of the 3-point line, which allowed guys like Nick Pringle inside to move a little bit more freely. Without him, when he was able to check in, defenses are a little bit more compact. They're kind of coming down to the paint a little bit more. They're trying to force South Carolina to play outside in. And the reason is that ain't worked, right? Early in this game, to start this game, this team was working to and through Nick Pringle down low. It was get the ball to the paint. Let's let him post up. And then let's have guys on the outside move around. Move off ball. Get the motion away from the basketball. And let's find where a cutter can be found. Let's cut to create mismatches. Once we get them, let's attack the basket and let's go. For some reason, the last couple of games, at least the couple that I've watched, which was the last loss, the Clemson game, etc. For some reason, that system starts to work, and then South Carolina knocks down a 3, and now all of a sudden we're playing outside in basketball. Right? It's like they knock down a 3, and it's like, guys, you knock that down because by playing inside out, you force the defense to give you that shot, and you're able to set it up and make it happen. Now that you're trying to play outside in, they're drawing out the defense. Now the three-point shots become more contested. They become lower percentage three-point shots, and that's where you get into trouble. Until this team figures out that, yes, they are trying to take away the inside, we have still got to play to the inside. They are trying to take away the inside-out basketball we want to play. We've still got to play it. We've got to play our game. We've got to dictate the game to the opponent. And for whatever reason, from what I've seen, this team just keeps getting away from that. And as long as they do, that's going to be a problem for the South Carolina Gamecocks. Again, they fall to 10-5. They are now 0-2 to start conference play. South Carolina's next matchup will be two nights from now, and it does not get easier. You go from number 5 Alabama to number 2 Auburn coming to the crib. And I'm going to tell you right now, you better be on your A game, because this Auburn team is good. This Auburn team is a Final Four team. Not a Final Four team. This Auburn team is a national championship caliber team. This is the best team Bruce Pearl has put together yet out there on the plains. Then you're at Vandy, and then you're right back into the thick of it. On the road at number 17, Oklahoma, back to the crib for a Florida team who just blew out the number 1 team in America by 30 points two nights ago. This is a tough run of play. By the way, it's not going to get easier, because the Southeastern Conference is a bleeping machine this year. This conference is as good at, and I'm, you know how I feel about all this, but I'm going to say what I got to say.
Are you going to say it means more?
No.
It just means more?
No. This might be the best conference I've ever seen in the world of basketball, in college basketball as well. I mean it. This might be the best conference I have, and I'm including back in the ACC when Carolina and Duke were all in their heyday. This might be the best basketball conference I've ever seen. I'm including back when the Big Ten used to be a basketball conference. This might be the deepest, best overall basketball conference that I have ever seen. Auburn is a Final Four team. Mississippi State's an Elite Eight team. Alabama's a Final Four team. Ole Miss is a Final Four team. Texas A&M might be a Final Four team. Florida might be a Final Four team. Tennessee was the number 1 team in the country till they lost to Florida. Still a Final Four team. Georgia, there were people online last night. Georgia was running folks out of the gym saying Georgia's a basketball school now. I mean, it's this conference is flat. And by the way, have you noticed we haven't even gotten to Kentucky yet? We haven't even gotten to LSU yet. This conference is as good as I have ever seen any conference be in college basketball. I was talking to Brad Evans on BetMGM tonight on Tuesday, which is when Florida was beating the hell out of Tennessee. And he asked me on the ear, he's like, Rob Brown, what the hell's the SEC right now? I was like, the Terminator of conferences. It's a juggernaut. It's unbelievably good. If Lamont Paris doesn't figure something out with his team and start to dictate games, I'm not kidding you when I say, Lonzo, South Carolina may have 3 conference wins at the end of the year. And that says more about the conference than it does South Carolina. But if you don't figure it out, this is a problem, because this conference is, and I mean this, maybe the best conference for one season that I've ever seen in my life. And I've been covering this sport for 17 years. It's the best conference I've ever seen. All right, let's get to item number 3. Guess who's back in the transfer portal? Guess who's dabbling, or should I say dabbling, back in the transfer portal? The third player to join Clemson's roster out of the portal is former 5-star recruit and Alabama edge rusher Jeremiah Alexander. He was a teammate back in high school in 2021, won a national championship with Clemson defensive lineman Peter Woods back in Alabaster, Alabama. They won the Natty, or the state title, together in 2021. They would obviously separate as Peter Woods would come to Clemson. Jeremiah Alexander went to Alabama. But Alexander had a bit of a problem. He signed on with Nick Saban, who was big on having these 5-star recruits as edge rushers. Kalen DeBoer comes over this year. Alexander saw limited playing time. He did play both outside and inside linebacker. I suspect he's going to have the same role with Clemson. Look, he's a guy that, if he buys in and Dabo Swinney is able to bring the best out of him, he can absolutely be an asset to this defense. He has not been at Alabama, which is unusual, because you know that's one of the spots that Nick Saban put a hell of a lot of emphasis on during his time in Tuscaloosa. Kalen DeBoer, more of an offensive-minded guy. We'll see how that plays out. But this is the now third transfer portal player in via this cycle. He joins Purdue defensive end Will Helt and Missouri State wide receiver Tristan Smith on the Clemson Tiger roster. So for those of you that have been nitpicking at Dabo because he has not been using the portal, he's using the portal, dude. That's three All players right. in 3 weeks.
At what point is this no longer a story and it's more about the players transferring than it is the fact that Dabo is using the transfer portal?
From the standpoint of?
It has to be reported every time that Dabo has done it again.
Oh, let's be real clear here. The answer is, until football starts, every time he does it, this transfer portal window.
Okay.
Right?
All right.
Like every time he gets somebody, because again, that has been the primary narrative about Dabo Swinney for the past year and a half. Right? For the past year and a half.
That's what I mean. I'm just awaiting the day. Not that you hammer at home, but I'm awaiting the day when that is no longer the narrative.
I'll tell you when the day is.
Because he has taken it away from all the people who have harped on it forever.
He absolutely has. Now, I'll tell you, you want to know what the next narrative is? I'll tell you what the next narrative is now. He's getting guys that aren't really playmakers, right? Jeremiah Alexander's a five-star recruit, sure, but he's played limited games at Alabama. He's been a rotational piece. He's been a specialist, right? Tristan Smith comes from Missouri State. Quick. Somebody tell me Missouri State's mascot. This man transferred 2 weeks ago. We talked about it at length. What's Missouri State's mascot? What conference are they in?
Stallions.
That was with confidence, and I'm going to tell you the truth.
He doesn't know.
Missouri State football are the Bears. They're the Bears. But you see the point here? The point is the next narrative is going to be, oh, but why isn't he competing for the top players in the portal? You just got a guy out of the Ohio State Valley Conference. Is that a game changer for Clemson at a spot that they need a game changer at wide receiver?
This is the Ohio Valley Conference.
You know what I mean.
Well, I just want you to be accurate.
I know. I got to get it right. I get it. The point here is that's going to be the next narrative. He's getting guys now, but he's not getting good guys. He's just getting some guys, and that's not enough. That's going to be the next narrative until he starts pushing it.
Or these transfer portal guys aren't working. Why did he just stick to his guns and only bring his guys in?
Maybe so. It's going to be criticism until when?
Until they win.
Until he wins a national
champ.
Yep. By the way, shout out to my guy Shane. I was up at the well yesterday, and Shane came up. He was like, yo, you're Rob Brown. I listen to the show every day. My man's listening right now. Shane, my guy, good to meet you yesterday. Thanks for listening on
bud. Wait. I thought this was the Rod Brown show.
The Rod Brown show.
You're Rob Brown?
When people meet me in public and my name's on the back of my jersey, yes.
I'm on the wrong show.
I think I'm going to get a custom Hot Rod jersey at this point. Shane, my man, great to meet you yesterday. Thanks for saying hello. Made my day, man. Appreciate you very, very much. Let's take a break back after this on the Rob Brown Show. It's the Fan Upstate. And the Rob Brown Show continues. It is the Fan Upstate. Ladies and gentlemen, you may or may not be aware of this. But great when there's a playoff game tonight.
Oh, I'm aware.
This evening. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish take on James Franklin and his Pennsylvania State University Nittany Lions. The winner moves on to the national championship. Who you got? So straight up prediction right out of the gate. Who you got?
All right, so Denton Day yesterday predicted exactly what I was going to predict.
And that is?
Penn State versus Ohio State
Big
rematch.
Big 10 matchup. So do I. I am picking Penn State tonight. And I'll tell you why I'm picking Penn State. There's one number that I think jumps off the page at me. And that number is this. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish use a man-to-man press defense on nearly 60% of their snaps. It's what they do. That is their philosophy. We are going to jam you at the line of scrimmage. We are going to throw your timing and rhythm off. And for a guy like Drew Aller, that's a problem. He's a good quarterback. I wouldn't put him amongst the greats. If you're going to be a guy who can watch a bump press man defense on the outside if you're going to be able to see a guy and get out of 1, 2, 3, throw. 1, 2, 3, throw. And be able to be a guy that instead of throwing on a rhythm is able to watch a wide receiver break coverage and anticipate and throw the ball to the spot the wide receiver is going to be and not the spot where he should be, that's how you're going to be great. And I don't know if Adler's got that. But I'll tell you what Penn State does have. I think Penn State's got the ability to take advantage of that. Why? Because what does Penn State want to do? Run the ball, get the ball to the tight end. That's their game plan. Run the ball, get the ball to the tight end. And I think if they are able to do that, I'm going to feel a lot better about their chances to win. And then there's the other side of the coin, and that's the Penn State defense. Now, we are still waiting to find out. I have not seen, this does not mean there hasn't been one yet, I just haven't seen it yet, an update on Abdul Carter, who is a monster off the right edge. Monster. Game-changing caliber monster. But I'll tell you what I like about Penn State, and this has been something I've talked about throughout their entire playoff run thus far. Penn State knows who your playmaker is, and they're going to come get him. They did it against Kevin Jennings in round one. They did it against Ashton Janti in round two. I talked about that on Monday. Had somebody text the show go, wait a minute, Rob, he still had 103 yards. Yeah. On 30 carries. He had his way season-low rushing yard total on 30 carries. And on top of that, as Denton Day pointed out last night, or yesterday afternoon, yesterday morning, whatever it was, as Denton Day pointed out yesterday morning, late in that game.
Just say Wednesday.
Yesterday. I'll just say yesterday. Yesterday, Boise State was giving the ball to Ashton Janti late in that game after the game was decided. Game was over, and they're giving it to Janti. Why? Stat pad, right? Let him finish with 100 yards. Let a Heisman runner-up season cap off with a 100-yard game in the playoffs. It was a stat pad. He really was closer to, like, 75 yards, 70 yards. Way a season low. 100 yards below, over 100 yards below his season average. They got him there. This is why I like Penn State. Because they're going to say, look, we're going to get after your playmaker, like the guy you want to go to, and you got to beat us elsewhere. And here's my thing. For all the talk that we have had about Drew Aller, the quarterback, Riley Leonard is kind of in that same zone to me. Like, Riley Leonard's good enough. But Riley Leonard is a dude that I think wants to throw to where a receiver should be, not where a receiver is. Now, he's got some playmakers, for sure. But I think he's a guy who wants to go to where a guy should be, not a guy where a guy is. And I think that's a problem. Here's the third problem. Riley Leonard is a guy that if you play bump on the outside and you take his timing away from him, his natural reaction, and it's fine because he has the ability. But his reaction is what? Put the ball away, run between the tackles. I don't think he can do that against Penn State. I think Penn State's defense wins this game. I'm on the under in this game, for what it's worth. I think that Penn State's defense pins the ears back. And I will say this. I said this about the Georgia team in the Notre Dame-Georgia game. I think Georgia made one critical mistake in this game. Georgia's defense played soft. For a team that over the past handful of years has made their entire identity, we're going to kick your ass at the line of scrimmage on defense. We are going to go get big old monsters. We're going to line them up four across the front, and we are just going to whip you at the line of scrimmage. I went back and watched, specifically in the third quarter, where Georgia kind of had their back against the wall because they gave Notre Dame points to end the first half. They gave Notre Dame points to end the second half. All of a sudden, it's a two-score game. This is the point where I expect a Kirby Smart team to throw caution to the wind and go, look, if Riley Leonard burns us down the field when we play bump man on the outside, he burns us. It is going to be what it's going to be. Tell you what we're not going to do. What we're not going to do is let Riley Leonard beat us with his legs up the middle. What we're not going to do is let Notre Dame run the ball on us. We're going to make them throw. They're going to have to make a stellar play. And anytime they don't, it's going to stop the clock and preserve precious seconds for us. What did Georgia do? The exact opposite. For some reason, Georgia started playing off the ball. For some reason, Georgia started playing back. And what happened? Riley Leonard was just picking up four, picking up six. I think he only ended with, what, like 70, 75 rushing yards, something like that? I mean, it wasn't a huge day for Riley Leonard. But that's because he was just getting first downs. Keep in mind, at that point in the game, Notre Dame is trying to bleed the clock. They are trying to kill time off the clock. So I don't need to see Riley Leonard going out there and breaking off 20, 22, 24-yard runs. Riley, find the sticks, get to him, go down, baby. Keep that clock chugging along. That's what he did against Georgia. I don't think Penn State gives that to them. I don't think Penn State allows that. Texter said, Rob, you're wrong again. Notre Dame's offensive line is bigger and better than Boise. I'm going to say two things about that, Texter. Number one, I think Boise State's offensive line was underappreciated. All right? I really do. Ashton Janty was good. Got to have a hole to run through. I don't care how good you are. I agree with you. Notre Dame's offensive line is bigger and better than Boise. Penn State dominated Boise's offensive line. Right? Like, even if Notre Dame is bigger and better, and I agree with you that they are, Texter, even if they are bigger and better, I would also point out that they got whipped. Penn State owned the line of scrimmage. Ashton Janty wasn't able to break things off just because he is very good, and he is. He was able to break things off for one reason and one reason alone. The offensive line opened the hole. He couldn't break things off against Penn State. Why not? Because Penn State just took the line of scrimmage away. It's why I pointed out, and we talked about this back in the first hour of the show. What I really enjoyed about the Penn State game against Boise is that they knew exactly what they needed to do. They took Ashton Janty away, and they said, hey, we're going to go get you. And what did Boise's quarterback, Madsen, do? He dropped a few darts. Boise State stayed alive as long as they did, not because of Ashton Janty. Boise State stayed alive as long as they did because they had a quarterback who was dropping darts. They had a quarterback that was seeing the field, watching the field develop, and dropping darts. Here's my question. Do you feel like Riley Leonard is that guy? If Penn State says we are selling out on the run, we are selling out on the run, we're going to play press man on the outside, and we're going to trust that our guys are better than your guys on the edge and at quarterback. Do you trust Riley Leonard to be a guy that is so precise through the air that you can make Penn State back off? Because here's the deal. Football's a simple game, guys. It really is. It's made complex, but it's a simple game. If you are the offense, what are you doing when you are drawing up and diagnosing plays? What are you doing? You are trying to create situations where I got more guys over here than you got guys over here. That's the game plan. You are trying to figure out where's the defense going to put more guys so that I can put more guys in a different place and put the ball there. That's football. Offensively, football at its core is real simple. I want more dudes than you got dudes at this spot on the football field, and then I got to get the ball there. I'll tell you what Penn State's been doing. They've been putting more dudes at the line of scrimmage. That's what they're doing. They're saying, we're going to tell you what we're going to do. We're going to put all our dudes here. This is where we're going to put more dudes. And if you want to beat us, you've got to get the ball where you have more dudes. Or where you have the same amount of dudes, but your dudes are better. That's the other option. I would have more dudes than you got dudes at one spot. But if you have the same amount of dudes, I need my dudes to be better dudes than your dudes. I've said dudes in an inordinate amount of time at this point. One-on-one coverage on the outside. What I'm looking for in that spot is for my dudes to be better than your dudes. I want to have a dude on the outside that I can throw the ball out there, and my dude's just going to outplay your dude. But in order to do that, I got to have a dude throwing the ball that I trust to put in the right spot. I would ask Notre Dame fans, Do you trust Riley Leonard as that dude? Do you trust Riley Leonard to give your wide receivers an opportunity to go make a play? That's my question. And I will tell you straight up, I like Riley Leonard. My wife loves Riley Leonard. He's a very handsome, rugged-looking individual for a quarterback, for a prep. He is. Do you trust that dude? Because I'll tell you, against the Penn State defense I've seen the last two games, the answer is not really. Not really, because they're going to take the run away from him, which means now Riley Leonard has got to get the ball and stand in the pocket. He can't run. I think Notre Dame sells out to take the quarterback run away from Riley Leonard. And if that is the case, my question mark is, do I trust him to make the throws until what? Until Penn State starts to back off. Until Penn State goes, you know what? He's getting us. So now we got to put another dude back there so that it's not one-on-one. So we have more dudes than they have dudes down the field. And if they got to take a guy away from selling out to prevent Riley Leonard from taking off with the football, what's that mean? Now I got more dudes to block for Riley Leonard. Now Notre Dame's got more dudes in the box. And if I got more dudes in the box, now what am I doing? Snap it to Riley Leonard, look down the field, look down the field, nobody's available. Now you go. And you throw Penn State's defense off balance. Penn State has not been thrown off balance yet. There were two teams that were able to throw Penn State off balance. Do I think that Notre Dame can do that? Is it possible? Yes. Do I trust Riley Leonard? He's got to break out with the legs, and I don't trust that. As far as Penn State goes, there were two teams that threw them off balance. Ohio State threw them off balance in the second half, which was why it was a one-score game. And Oregon threw them off balance in the Big Ten Championship. You know, the consensus number one team in America. And the only team to beat that team are the two teams that there is. Right now, Notre Dame's good. And I like Notre Dame, and I like what Marcus Freeman is doing. Is Notre Dame now as good as Oregon was when they came into the Big Ten title game? No. Is Notre Dame right now as good as Ohio State was down the stretch, with the exception of the Michigan game? Which, by the way, what did Michigan do? Michigan said, we're going to put more dudes at the line of scrimmage and Henderson and Judkins are not going to beat us. What have I said is the number one mistake that, not Ryan Day, Chip Kelly made that cost Ohio State that Michigan game? He looked at the box. He said, Michigan's got seven, sometimes eight in that box, and we are still going to run into the box. We are going to keep running into where they got dudes. And it ended up in a spot where Michigan said, we got more dudes, and Chip Kelly said, I don't care. I'm still coming there. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, the team that's got more dudes is going to win that spot. Ohio State never said, let's go to where we got more dudes. What did Ohio State do in rounds one and two of the playoffs? They went, oh, Jeremiah Smith, that's a dude. And he's a better dude. So when they put one dude on our dude, we're going to throw the ball to that dude and let that dude go be a dude. And Jeremiah Smith's a dude. And then when you started backing off to try to take away the dude advantage on the outside, that's where Judkins becomes a hoss. Because now I got more dudes in front of my running back. Now he wins that battle. I don't know if Notre Dame can do that to Penn State the way that Ohio State's done that to Oregon. We'll see. You know what else we'll see? Lou Lucchesin from the Greenville News in the next segment. You know what you're about to hear? Lonzo shefting your ears with his sports flash.
Still believe Ryan Day took over play calling. We'll see. The Eagles are one step closer to the return of quarterback Jalen Hurts, who has been in concussion protocol since December 22nd. Hurts returned to practice yesterday. Wednesday was Hurts' first practice since the injury. As the Eagles get prepared for a first-round matchup with the Green Bay Packers on Sunday, the Clemson Tigers are back in the transfer portal once again, also the transfer portal. This time landing former Alabama edge rusher Jeremiah Alexander. Alexander joins former Purdue defensive end Will Helt and Missouri State receiver Tristan Smith on the roster. Alexander is a former five-star recruit from the 2022 class who played high school ball with current Tigers defensive end Peter Woods. Tune in Saturday at 11:30 as the Furman Paladins take on the Wofford Terriers. It's Furman versus Wofford. It's his rivalry right here on your home for Furman Paladins basketball, The Fan, Upstate.